Foolish Mortals. The upcoming documentary about Haunted Mansion fans is almost upon us. And you can attend the world premiere screening on Saturday, July 15th, 2017 at the Red Lion in Anaheim, California. To get your tickets and to check out the brand new teaser trailer, just go to foolishmortalsdoc.com.
Spellcaster Media presents.
Greetings and welcome to episode 123 of the Creepy Kingdom Podcast. A podcast all about the spookiness of Disney and beyond. I am your host, Mr. James H. Carter II. Coming up in this episode, we continue our series of looking at the films from the dark ages of Disney. And we talk all about the 1980 film, The Watcher in the Woods. So, without any further ado, let's begin. Hey, everybody. I'm here with Cupcake Terror. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Super. And I'm here with Roxy Tart. Howdy.
Hi.
I said howdy.
Hi. Oh, howdy, partner.
Yeah, I think I deserved a howdy back.
Howdy, partner. How y'all doing today?
I don't think that's appropriate for what we're doing this episode, but I just felt like saying howdy.
Well, I mean, it just harkens back to the we're going to Disneyland to hang out in Frontierland all day long dressed as cowboys episode.
That actually wasn't on Creepy Kingdom. That was on Roxy's World. Wow.
I knew that. Creepy Kingdom listeners, you're not supposed to know what I'm talking about. That was a trick question.
And they passed.
And what we talked about, and I guess as we're diverting right off the bat here, was spending a day as cow folk in Frontierland in Disneyland.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, remember?
Yeah, and yep. I have purchased a cowboy hat. So I got so I've got
which
that.
Which I've seen, and it's awesome. It's awesome. I feel like since that wasn't an episode of Creepy Kingdom, that before we actually do it, we should talk about it on an episode of Creepy Kingdom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or maybe a Patreon episode, because that's not, I don't know how creepy the dressing
that's
up is.
Okay, that's creepy. That's true.
I mean, unless you're talking about a grown man wearing a cowboy hat.
Cowboy hat.
That's a little creepy.
Is it the cowboy hat you bought too small for you?
It's too small? Yeah, no, I think it's too big.
Well, I mean, in James speak, probably. But yeah, it's not your normal 10-gallon cowboy hat. Let's put it that way.
Not you didn't go all out and spend $300 on a Stetson. What's wrong with you?
Not yet. But I dropped about 16 at Party City. So it looks like a real hat, though, right? It doesn't look like a costume hat.
Sure.
Maybe
I can see it right now too in my head. I'm like, oh my gosh, that hat.
maybe because you guys are cowboy hat experts, you know, to the average person.
Yeah, no, Roxy is. I
am actually
lived in farm area for most of my life.
Well, let's get back on track here because that's
no worries. Totally off track already. My bad, y'all. I know that it's like my fault most of the time, so I'm so sorry.
That's right. I brought up Howdy. So no, but we're here today. We're talking about another Dark Ages film. That, in case you're unclear, what the Dark Ages are. It is the period.
That's the time before the Renaissance over in England when the Black Plague.
Right, that's the real Dark Ages. But the Dark Ages of Disney films were before the Disney Renaissance, which started with Little Mermaid and all that stuff that followed that. When Disney decided that they wanted to make creepy, dark movies for about 10 years or so.
Should we say why they decided that? In case anybody doesn't know.
Tell us.
Oh, because in the 70s, Disney was not making as much money as they were like in the 60s and before with their movies. So they decided to pull away from children and target young adults, which they had never really done before. So in the mid to late 70s, that was what they decided. And then for, about 10 years into the mid 80s, they decided to make movies for young adults. And a lot of them were kind of creepy and dark and a little more mature. And so it became the Disney Dark Ages.
That's what we dubbed it.
No, that's what it is.
I haven't seen that anywhere. Called. Really? I haven't. Yeah. No, I thought we made that up. No, we made it up. I don't want to hear it. No.
We hella like, made
I
that
refuse.
Up. We totally made that up.
I didn't hear from anywhere else, so I made it up to me. But but anywho, today we're going to talk about the film The Watcher in the Woods.
Something happened in these woods. Something that has never been explained. And it's happening again. Now.
Did you hurt yourself?
Oh, it's just a little cut.
What sort of person are you? Sensitive? Do you sense things?
The past pursues the present like a recurring dream. What began as a game ended when a young girl vanished into thin air.
Kara! That was my daughter's name.
What do you think happened to Karen?
I think she's still out there.
Karen is trying to come back.
What did you see? That Karen outside there. Don't you understand? It's someone else.
Only Jan can help Karen. But who's going to help Jan? Betty Davis, Carol Baker, David McCallum, and Lynn Holly Johnson.
Whatever happened to my Karen could happen to you.
The Watcher in the Woods.
Oh.
Well, that's the kind of noise. Come on.
I'm sorry.
Okay, well, before we even get going here, a few things here. This came out in 1980. And also, this is going to be full of spoilers. So if you hadn't seen it, which is likely, check it out beforehand.
Spoiler alert. It came out in 1980, so spoiler alert.
Well, I mean, but saying most people haven't seen it. I assume. I don't know. Which is funny is that prior to deciding to do this, I had not seen it. Roxy, you said this was a film that you enjoyed as a kid. I don't know about you, Cupcake. Had you seen this before?
No, I have never seen it before. I had never seen it, and today was my first time seeing it.
All right, and it was my first time last week when I watched it.
And I owned it on VHS.
Nice. So you got a lot of repeat viewings. So what we're going to do here is, it's funny because we're going to kind of go through and talk about our thoughts as it goes through and discuss how creepy this film is. But one of the things I want to say right off the bat about the film is after I watched it,
I thought to myself, I don't really see anything about this movie at all that is inherently Disney in any possible way. I feel that this is a straight up psychological horror film that never releases tension at any point. There's no comic relief.
Nope. Like, no, there's no comic relief. There's no funny sidekick. There's no, like, I mean, there was a dog. So at least there was an animal in right. the movie. But
there's no acting.
There is acting. It's bad, a lot of it, but it's still acting.
Well, let's reserve the judgment. I'm just trying to describe what it is, because I mean, even in a lot of, you know, Disney films from this era, you could still see this as a Disney film. Like, there's fantasticness to it. There's a childlike wonder that's sprinkled throughout it. You know? You know, like, there's some fun in it, and, you know, but then there's some really scary parts. Like, that's what happens in a lot of the films from this time. But this was just a full-on assault. To brand this a Disney film, I think was a very bold move, and probably not the best move, because I think this is before, I'm almost confident this is before Touchstone Pictures started Disney's adult brand. I think if Touchstones would have existed, this would have come out under the Touchstone label.
Definitely.
Because it's not really a children's movie.
You're right, though, because, like, they did in this whole era, you know, they did, like, Flight of the Navigator and Tron and The Black Hole and Return to Oz and, like, and all of those have that. You know, they were all older. They weren't cartoons. They were meant for older kids, but they all were still, like, fun or funny or had something quirky or, like, you know.
Right.
And this did not.
Yeah, so that's it. This was just a full-on assault. So, all right, so before we get started, let's talk about what this film is about.
It's about 84 minutes too long.
Oh, she's boy. So mean.
I'm very mean.
God, who would say something like that?
I don't know.
Okay.
All right.
All right. So since it's my movie, I will give the synopsis. Okay. Wandering in the Woods is a suspense horror movie that is about an American family who comes to the English countryside and rents a house from an old lady played by Bette Davis. And it starts out as kind of a, like, haunted house, ghost in the woods type feel. And you find out that that's not actually what it is. But that's how it starts, is you think maybe it's a haunted house or maybe it's, like, a haunted woods. It turns out that the old lady who they rent the house from had a daughter, Karen, who disappeared 30 years before. And so the movie is about the main character, whose name is Jan, played by Lynn Holly Johnson, who you will hear Cupcake talk about later, I'm sure. She has much to say about her. She plays Jan, the teenager, who looks a lot like Karen. And through all of this weird stuff that starts happening, Jan figures out kind of what happened to Karen, and she figures out how to try to bring her back. So that's what the movie is about.
All right.
And it's a small cast. It's got, like, I don't know, 8 people in the whole cast. Like,
Bette Davis.
It's got Bette Davis. And this was one of her, like, super, super later movies. Because this was made in 1978. Yeah, this is one of her, like, way, way later movies. Way after Baby Jane and All About Eve and all of that.
Yeah, she wasn't in the film that much, and I feel like, you know, they got her in it, and they have her, like, as the, you know, top billing, you know, just to say, oh, dude, this is a star in the film, but she's not one of the leads at all.
No, she's not.
A little bait and switch there. So you watched this film growing up, and then you just rewatched it again after a long time. So how was it going back into the woods, for lack of a better phrase.
I was going to say, that's a different company that made that movie.
No, that was Disney.
That was Disney.
What?
Into the Woods? That was Disney, babe.
The most recent movie?
Yeah.
One?
Yeah.
Oh, shoots.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
With Johnny Depp and Prince Charming?
Yeah. I haven't seen it.
All right.
Anyhow.
So, yeah. I loved this movie when I was younger. I had it on VHS, and it was, I rented it from the video store. There's this video store down the street from me when I was younger called Video 2000, which I'm positive I've talked about before on this show. But the guy that owned it was really, really nice, and he really liked me, and I was his most regular customer. So after I had rented this movie a few times, he finally just gave it to me.
Wow.
So I ended up owning it. And they used to air it on the Disney Channel at Halloween. So I'd watch it then too. And I really liked it. It was super scary. I always thought it was like this really cool magic witchcraft, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then I didn't see it for like, I don't know, 20 years or something like that. And then I watched it again today. And it turns out this is not a movie that holds up so well over time.
No, not at all.
So I kind of wish I hadn't watched it, to be totally honest. Wow. I kind of wish I had not watched it and I was just how it was in my memory, because it was so good and so scary in my memory. And it was so not in reality.
Gotcha.
And also it, I remembered it as being a lot more magic. Like I remembered it as being a very heavy, like magic, occult, witchcraft, you know, seance movie. And it turns out it's not. There's like 10 minutes of that.
Well, you probably just kept rewinding those parts.
Right? Just that end scene over and over and over again. Yeah, but, you know, nostalgia, I still like this movie.
Okay.
Go ahead, cupcake.
All right, well, in case, it's unfortunate that we're not doing this as a video podcast, because I made a sign, and it basically says, Watcher in the Woods sucked. Like, well, a lot.
Thanks for the sign.
It even has the blue circle, the watcher, who's the blue circle crossed out.
The blue circle crossed out. Wow. I was struggling to watch this movie. I know a lot of it has to do with when it was made and just the production value, but that's not what made me hate the movie as much as I hate it. It was the acting. It was so difficult to move past that, like, the blonde girl who just was the same voice the whole time, or was like yelling at the dude, like, you have to help me fight. I'm like, no, you, why are you yelling? That's not emoting. That's just yelling. And just her, I don't know if she was like on Quaaludes for part of the movie and like high the other part, but I couldn't get past the acting. The only thing that I liked about it were the small parts that Bette Davis was in it. And even then, they were just small parts. She was definitely like a plot point, and she was, for me, the shining light for the whole thing. But I just couldn't enjoy it. I didn't get scared by anything. I wasn't on the edge of my seat. And I don't know if that's because I'm an adult or I never saw it as a kid, but there was just nothing there for me that I could like really enjoy, except for making fun of it, which was a lot of fun because the clothing that they wore was very much like late 70s, early 80s, the Farrah Fawcett hair, or almost Farrah Fawcett hair with like it was just bad. I mean, as we go and like bring up certain points of it, I'm sure I'll have more to say. But my overall feeling of it right now is I don't ever want to have to watch that movie ever again.
All right. Well, I think we got it. Well, this is going to be a very interesting discussion, because overall, you guys didn't seem to have a good time. And so I hadn't seen it before, just to reiterate. And I could say that I absolutely loved this movie. I was actually completely blown away. I loved pretty much everything about it. And like I said it earlier, I mean, it was just relentless with the tension. And it was like, I mean, this, as we go through and talk about all these, this, the imagery in this film what was going on, and probably one of the shining things of this film, which we're not going to really get into specifically, so I'll just mention it now, is the cinematography is absolutely incredible. Like the there's all these like POV shots that the only place that those kind of shots were at that time were in like Friday the 13th, like the first one that we don't even see in the whole movie. Like there's all like the watcher POV shots and the camera angles and the choice, like it was pretty bold. Like I loved it. And it's funny, I don't really get too startled watching horror movies or anything like that. And there's this one cutaway scene that they do that was so good that it actually startled me. Like I was like, wow. Now, as far as the bad acting,
oh god,
like it doesn't even, like it's, that's like totally irrelevant to me, because that didn't, like it didn't, for me, I didn't need to really buy exactly what was going on, because that definitely is a criticism of the film, because she kind of adapted to what was going on like pretty fast from, you know, the regular life,
right, from being brand new to, oh my god, there's this girl who may or may not be dead and I'm gonna find her and bring her back
but, with my new boyfriend.
So but I feel like that explanation had to have been like trimmed out of the movie, because that was just a little too, that almost seems like bad writing at that. That's how she jumped to that. But then, you know, I guess the only thing that is Disney-esque about this film is having, you know, bubblegum, you know, child leads where they're kind of pretty people, or, you know, especially for the time, you described her as a, you know, she's a Farrah Fawcett hair. Yep. And I felt like, that was supposed to be like for the teens of the time, you know, a way to identify with the experience. So I guess it just didn't really bother me, but I just overall, I absolutely loved it. I thought it was a great movie. I have some thoughts about the ending, which we're going to get to a little bit later, because there actually is alternate endings.
About 156 of them.
Yeah, no, there's only three.
We could have told people 156. They could have believed it.
They could have, but you know. It's just funny because I, you know, that Cupcake and I, we both watched it for the first time. And we had completely opposite reactions to it.
Which I absolutely love. I love that so much, because your experience is definitely wholly different than mine. And I love hearing about the parts, and I want to hear about the parts that you got really excited over.
All right.
I feel like I'm missing something. Did I watch the same movie?
I'm not sure, but I do feel like if you get off course watching this film, like mentally, like you're not going to get back on track. So if you're off course from the bad acting, the other stuff is going to bring you back.
I was like, what the heck?
Yeah, and like that's definitely one of the main problems, is that like she was not bought in from the beginning.
No,
like it within the first like 5 minutes, she was just like, nope.
the first scene. When they're driving down the freeway, and those point of view shots, I totally get the point of view shots from the watcher's perspective. I thought those were really cool. I do have to agree about the cinematography. I liked a lot of the cool shots that they did. It just didn't fit everything else that was going on in the movie for me. But like that first thing when they're driving down the driveway with all the trees and the watchers there, I'm like, what is this, some stalker film? Like, at that moment, that was the moment I'm like, I'm not with this.
Well,
then we started talking, and I was like, "No, I'm definitely not."
The thing. Seeing that, as we said, this is like a stalker movie. That is certainly not what I expected when I started watching this movie.
Right.
So immediately, I'm drawn in. I'm like, "Okay, like this is creepy right from the first second."
Most people go into this movie very much thinking about like Escape from Witch Mountain and Return to Witch Mountain, mm-hmm. You know, because it's in that same era. The girl that played Ellie, the the younger daughter in this, was actually in Escape to Witch Mountain.
Okay.
She's uncredited, but she was in it. And so, it, you know, it's right in that same, like, era. You kind of think it has the same feel, but no, you're right. It starts and you automatically think, oh, okay, this is a stalker movie. All right, cool. But no, this is not a stalker movie. And then it, you know, goes into it a little bit and the you get the window thing. You're like, oh, this is a haunted house movie. No, this is not a haunted house movie. You know, and as it goes through, it's like, you're not really sure what kind of movie you're watching for a while. Like, so I think that that's one of the things that lends to that feeling you were talking about, James, on how it never lets up.
Yeah.
Is because really until you finish the movie, you're not sure what kind of movie you're watching.
That's true. Yeah.
Like, you know, it could be like it starts out and it could be a stalker movie. And then it could be a haunted house movie. Oh, it could be a haunted woods movie. It could be a ghost story, like a malicious ghost story. You know, like, turns out it's not. It's sci-fi and there's aliens. Like.
Aliens?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you watch the alternate endings?
I did. Well, now we're getting, we jumped a little ahead there.
Now we're getting ahead.
Yes, we did. But that's the point, is that it gives you the idea that it's so many different kinds of movies that you're not actually sure what kind of movie you're watching.
Yeah, it never really had an identity from the get-go, and then it never really picked up an identity.
And I think,
for me at least.
And,
so.
I think how you react to that is the split here, because if you don't know what kind of movie you're watching, then you can't anticipate what's coming. And I certainly did not anticipate where this movie was going at all, which is a rare treat, because usually you watch any movie, you know, most movies have the same formula. You're a few steps ahead. You're just, you don't.
Also, the opening sequence, since we're still in the beginning of the movie, I want to talk about the opening sequence for a second. It's very, very much Friday the 13th, like you mentioned. And both this movie and Friday the 13th both came out in 1980. So it's not like, you know, they straight stole the idea or something like that.
Right.
But they both came out the same year. But it wasn't the original beginning. It wasn't the original opening credits.
Oh, really?
The original opening credits were different, and Disney decided that they were too scary. And so they cut it and they redid it with this opening and put this one in.
That wasn't on the DVD. What was the original opening?
The original opening is it's a girl standing, it's like a little girl standing in the woods, and the watcher comes up behind her and like scares her. And she drops, she's holding a doll, and she drops the doll, and then the doll floats. And like it starts to like burn with that blue light.
Wow.
And then the title credits come up as its face is melting.
That's so cool.
Oh, that would have been so awesome.
But yeah,
I would have been sold. I would be like,
Disney decided that was so off brand, you know, and this this really was like kind of the beginning of their whole, you know, really dark movies. But they decided that it was too scary and it was too off brand because they weren't making a movie for like teenagers and grownups. They were making a movie for young adults. So,
Well, young adults of the 80s,
in
obviously.
Okay, young adults in 1980.
Oh, another thing I read somewhere, I believe it was Ron Miller, that was he head of the studio at the time? I don't remember. I think so, but he said that Watch from the Woods was going to be Disney's Exorcist.
Yes. Yeah, I read that too.
And that was a really interesting statement because, I mean, this is a few years after Exorcist comes out and is kind of, a genre defying hit. Like, it wasn't just like a big horror. Yeah. You know, it's a huge movie. It's controversial. And it made a lot of money. So it's kind of like, oh, you want to have your Exorcist. So why are you pulling back from the sort of scary opener? Like, you gotta set the tone for what you're watching right from the start. We don't need to like ease. I love that kind of smack in the face opener instead of just the slow ease into it. Generic, you know.
Well, there were a ton of problems with the movie, like. not with the cast and stuff like that. Apparently the cast did really well and the movie was made really easily, but behind the scenes in the studio, there were so many issues and there were so many like cooks in the kitchen.
Oh yeah.
That it just, it totally did not end up how it started. And we'll get into that later, but there were all kinds of stuff that was originally planned and then never got filmed or got filmed and then was pulled later or like, cause it was, we want to be scary and we want to be edgy, but no, we're Disney and this is too scary and too edgy. Like,
yeah, that makes sense. Like they didn't commit to, to what they were doing. You can't kind of dip your toe in and out. You got to either go in, you know, in or out of the pool, right?
You got to commit.
Again, when you think about the fact that you don't know what kind of movie you're watching, again, that kind of makes sense because it's like they didn't know what kind of movie they were making. Mm-hmm. You know?
That's what it seemed like. Yes.
Well, let's get into the movie here a little bit. Let's go through the plot and then we can, you know, talk about some things, our thoughts and feelings.
So this is the plot of the movie as told by Wikipedia, read, and yeah, every once in a while changed by me. Americans, Helen and Paul Curtis. Paul Curtis is played by David McCallum, who, if you guys watch NCIS, he plays the coroner, Ducky. I don't know if you watch NCIS or not.
I personally don't, but good to know.
But anybody out there, it's a very young David McCallum. Okay, so he plays the dad. And their daughters, Jan and Ellie, move into a manor. Mrs. Aylward, played by Bette Davis, the owner of the residence, notices that Jan bears a striking resemblance to her daughter, Karen, who disappeared inside a chapel near the village 30 years previously. Mm. They move in, and Jan begins to see strange blue lights in the woods with triangles and glowing objects. Eventually, Ellie goes to buy a puppy. She names Narek, an anagram for Karen, which it's Karen spelled backwards.
It's not even an anagram. It's literally Karen spelled backwards.
That is an anagram, though. I mean, you know, it's a letters in a different order, so it still technically is an anagram.
After seeing the reflection of the name Narek, Karen spelled backwards, Jan finds out about the mystery of Mrs. Aylward's missing daughter. So several strange occurrences appear, beginning with Mrs. Aylward saving Jan from drowning after she falls into a pond after looking at a blue circle, and ending with Jan finding a man named Tom, who explains that Karen did disappear but didn't die. He tells her that in a seance-like ceremony, Karen disappeared after lightning struck the tower and the bell fell on top of her. They find out the disappearance of Karen is linked to a solar eclipse. Jan figures out what she needs to repeat the sequence through some strange possession of Ellie, the younger daughter. So in the chapel, something possesses Ellie and explains how the accidental switch took place 30 years ago between Karen and the Watcher. Ellie explains that Karen was taken to another dimension while an alien-like being, the Watcher, came to Earth. The Watcher then appears independently as a pillar of light, fueled by the circle of friendship. It engulfs Jan, lifts her into the air, but Jan's friend Mike, who's like the pretty boy of the movie, intercedes and tries to pull her away before the Watcher disappears. At the same time, the eclipse ends and Karen, still the same age as when she disappeared, she reappears, still blindfolded, and she removes the blindfold and her mom, Bette Davis, comes in.
So that's how it ends. That's the theatrical ending.
Yes.
So taking us back to the beginning stages of the journey, as she's seeing the blue light and the triangles appearing everywhere, and then she starts looking in the mirror, and right away, she's not seeing her reflection, and then she sees a blindfolded girl in the reflection. That imagery is so creepy. Like, it's so awesome.
it's really cool how they did it. So they go into the house, like they go in the house for the first time and they're seeing it, and she goes up to the room that's going to be hers, and she puts her hand up against the window and the window cracks under her hand in the shape of a triangle. And there's a ton of like symbolism in this movie that all leads back to like each other. So she puts her hand on the window and it cracks in the shape of a triangle. And like, okay. And like, she's looking out in the woods and she thinks she sees a blue light, you know, and all right, this is kind of weird. And then the next scene, they're moving in. And she's carrying this big gilded mirror that's theirs. And she puts it down and she's not there. She has no reflection. Yeah. And, I mean, it was the late 70s. It's filmed really well. Like it's not CG, right?
These are all practical.
Yeah.
Not all of them.
Yeah, most of it's all practical effects.
But the mirror stuff definitely
was. Yeah. The mirror was, it's a really, really cool effect. And then like she doesn't see herself, and then all of a sudden she sees this blonde girl who kind of looks like her, who's blindfolded, and it looks like she's yelling, and she's in this white dress, but she can't hear anything. And like, yeah, like it's a good scene. Like, and yeah, nice and creepy.
Yeah, I loved it. And also the part where she almost drowned, that the angle of like we're at, the camera point of view is actually beneath her. So you see her kind of fall in and almost come towards the camera. It's, mm-hmm, you know, it's not the looking down. It kind of gives you you're not sure if that's another POV shot or not. I don't think that it was, but it kind of made me question, is there something in the water?
And there was. Well, that's why she fell in, because she saw another blue light. I'm really big on the symbolism in this movie, so I'm just going to keep going back to catch up to where you are. So the mirror. The mirror also cracks into a triangle, and then it falls over and the whole thing breaks.
Right.
So that's like the second triangle that she's seen now in the house. And then when she goes out into the woods and she's by the lake, she sees that blue light again, that same blue light that she saw earlier. And that's why she ends up falling into the lake. Although really you don't know, or they don't want you to know, if she falls in or if she was pushed in.
Right.
Like, you know, it's kind of up in the air. And then, yeah, that camera angle when she falls in and how it switches between the two camera angles.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause like they've got one camera underwater, and like, and Jan's underwater and she's supposed to be stuck in these branches. So she's all like tangled up in these branches, and they've got, well, I guess technically they've got three. So they've got that one. And then they've got the one that's supposed to be through her eyes. And then they've got one that Betty Davis comes in and, you know, runs up. So then they've got one that's like through Betty Davis's eyes.
Yeah. Yeah. Betty Davis eyes.
Oh no.
The Betty Davis one is really cool because you can see like the bubbles coming up from her mouth and she's looking straight into the camera, and then like the one from her point of view is cool because Betty Davis has actually got this stick and is like beating her with this stick, so you actually think that Betty Davis is trying to drown her.
Yeah,
she's like pushing her down. Yeah. At first, I was like, "Oh, Betty Davis is gonna murder this chick right off the bat." Go Disney! Right? But that wasn't the case.
But no. Then we find out after, and like Jan, she's like, she's yelling and, "Oh my God, help!" And don't, you know, from underwater, like while she's
makes no sense, because she would have been drowning if she had been talking underwater. I'm just saying.
But like, yeah, you think Betty Davis is trying to drown her. She's beating her. She's hitting her in the stomach with this long stick. And it's like, oh my God, this lady's the bad guy. This lady's the murderer. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then no, it turns out she was trying to push her down to get her under the branches so she could get her up.
Yeah, it was awesome bait and switch there, because you're kind of like, is she good? Is she bad? And that kind of plays on, you know, the age phobia of Disney films. Are old people?
Old ladies are bad guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, the old hag is always the bad guy.
Well, old ladies can also heft a young teenager back to the house, like, by a half a mile. So
yeah, she was a pretty buff old lady.
I guess so.
Maybe it was Narek. Narek.
Oh wait, yeah, she did have Narek.
Dragged her back to the house.
That must be what it is.
The dog.
Competition with Lassie. They couldn't.
But again, the whole bait and switch takes you back to, you're not really sure what kind of movie you're watching. Mm-hmm. Like, because she sees the light, and you're like, oh well, did she fall in or did it push her in? And then Betty Davis is there with the stick, and you're like, oh, Betty Davis pushed her in. All right, but then no, that's not what happened.
Yeah, no, I thought that was a great scene. another thing here. This, okay, I mentioned this before. There was a part of the movie that actually startled me. And this was good. Like, it actually startled me. I don't recall exactly right now what exactly was said. Something about, let's find out if there's ghosts or something. I don't remember what it was. All I know is that they're like, let's go do something. And then the next thing you see, it just cuts to this loud noise, and then there's like a mechanical clown right on the screen with like no context.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That one got me too. I was sitting there like, what the? Yeah. I was like, what just happened? And then they come out and it's a flipping carnival.
Yeah. That's exactly what you said.
Made Cupcake no was like, sense.
What just happened? And I was like, funhouse.
I was like, that was good. I was, because they just blindsided you with that, you know, like that kind of transition between scenes. I loved it, you know, and then right then I'm writing my notes. I'm like, oh, that was so good. I actually rewinded it and watched it again. I was like, and I'm getting into it, and I'm like, all right, they're having fun. They're at a carnival. It's a carnival scene. You drop your guard a little bit, and then they go into the House of Mirrors, and I was like. Yes, this was probably the point. This scene in the House of Mirrors was when I was like, I love this movie. I was like, yeah. Because apparently every time she looks in a mirror, yeah, the
she
little girl,
the
little girl in the blindfold, you know, Karen. Yeah. And it was just all these blindfolded Karens surrounding her.
And like when they show Karen, she's in this kind of bluish, whitish light. Like she's got light blonde hair. She's got a white blindfold on. She's got a white dress on. And it's like this bluish, ghosty white light. So you're still not sure if she's a ghost or not.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But that funhouse scene, I always wanted something like that to happen when I went into a House of Mirrors, and it never did. And I was always really sad.
I mean, that would.
Of course, you would say that.
I mean, but that would be such an awesome thing to do, like in some kind of a haunt that had a carnival theme or something.
Right?
You're just kind of surrounded. I really feel if this had been popular, that this, you could, you know, it would have lended itself really well to that type of experience. Not that Disney would have made a haunt out of it, but, you know, just, you know, another adaptation of it not made by Disney, because this is based on a novel. So, I don't know. But yeah, I love that element of it. And so that whole part, it's just kind of one of those, it's just so awesome to look at. It's a combination of that. It's old. Because if you tried to pull that off today, there'd be an element of it that'd be like, well, that's really cheesy. But this, it really has this old, like, vintage look to it. You know, it looks aged. And everything that's old already seems kind of weird and foreign to you, you know. So it already, it's like watching old, looking at old pictures of people in costumes and Halloween costumes. Like, wow, those are weird.
Right?
You know, like it was normal to them, but it just that alone, you know, so it has that element to it.
Well, and especially then, pre-internet.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't have the internet, so they just weren't as well educated. You know, normal people were not as well educated about the past and whatnot.
Right.
But, you know, and like the house is old. The music to it is like music box style. You know, you've got everything looks older. And so especially in that point in time, that stuff was already creepy.
Right, right. Yeah. So it was like a perfect storm that really couldn't be duplicated. I mean, we'll get into whether this could be made again, but my thoughts on that. Not, you know, you're like, I didn't say, do you want it to be? I said, if it could be. But I don't think I don't think it. Because as I'm watching it, I'm kind of like, I'll just say that I would like in a version, a more modern production version of this film, because there's so much I loved about it, or based on the original story, because I'd imagine the source material probably doesn't have all the problems. in it. Because I just think the premise is so. Just lends itself to just amazing, creepy imagery. It really, a lot of the stuff in the film kind of reminded me of watching The Ring. And even though I'm not a big fan of The Ring, I can't really deny the visuals of it are certainly
we can't really focus cool. on The Ring too much. That movie messed me up. So let's keep going. Well, I'm gonna have nightmares.
Sorry, tonight. We won't
okay,
watch
you
it.
Know what? One other thing that we need to throw out here. Cupcake Terror is not a big horror movie fan. Okay.
Oh well, it depends on the type. But yeah, that's totally true.
23 years has taught me that she's not a big horror movie fan. She right. will watch zombie movies, and now that she's grown, she does watch some. But she's never been a scary movie fan. She doesn't like to be scared, and scary movies scare her.
Yeah, so literally. Yeah.
I think that a lot of the time, if you watch a scary movie with Katie, that she will immediately go to that like defensive.
Right. You know? Yeah, but this is not a scary movie. Like,
I don't know.
There's nothing I think, scary I think, about
I,
this movie.
I disagree with you. I think it is a completely scary movie.
I just watched it and I'm like going through my mind. There was never a moment where I was just like, this is scary to me.
It might not be scary to you, but it is arguably a scary movie. Like,
I mean, it's scary bad, but I mean, no offense to anybody in the movie, obviously. You know, at the time it may have been wonderful, but for me, my personal opinion, no.
Rewatching it, there was nothing scary about it. I was watching it thinking, why did this scare me when I was a kid? But like,
well, you're a kid. I mean, everything is so much more magnified. Emotions are more magnified, and things that the dark and the unknown and all of those things are super scary. I think when you become an adult, those things change.
Well,
so,
yeah.
You know, what you become scared of is
yeah. I mean,
different.
I guess scary is subjective. The reason that I'm saying I feel the film is scary is because not that I was scared watching it, but that I felt that there was just this tension that the film never let up from that drew me in, you know, and I, that doesn't scare me, but I would imagine that would scare most people.
Right?
That's someone. That's why I'm saying that I think that it generally is a scary film. You know, but it's all definitely subjective. And even in the kind of films we talk about on our show here, like, we're not talking about straight up horror movies here, and we're kind of talking about...
Nah, this is Disney.
Yeah, but we're talking about stuff that might have... And I think with our listeners and everyone, I feel like some of the stuff that we talk about here might have actually scared us when we were younger. And that's part of the attachment, because it evoked emotion. And that's probably part of your attachment too, Roxy. You know, like even though you didn't remember exactly what it was you liked about it, it evoked this emotion out of you. It scared you. So you respected it in some way, you know, like you
when you posted originally or mentioned or whenever it was a year ago or whatever that we were gonna do an episode on this movie, I was so excited. Just immediately so ridiculously excited to do this movie because I love this movie. And then I rewatched it and I was like, wow, that movie's not as good as I remember it being, but I still love this movie. Like, when people bring it up in the future, I will still be like, oh my God, I love that movie.
So yeah, I know I didn't change it, but that's the other thing I wanted probably for my point of view of all this stuff here, which never gets old to me. But my favorite live action Disney film of all time is Darby O'Gill and the Little People.
Mm-hmm.
And it was introduced to me as a very young child. I grew attached to it. I loved it. I own it right now. Every time I watch it, I'm like, this is so awesome. Like, I never get that, like, there's so much awesomeness in this. Like, I've done episodes on this. It was one of our earliest episodes. I'm not going to rehash that. But it wasn't made too long after that. And the visuals of the scary scenes in Darby O'Gill are certainly very reminiscent in Watcher of the Woods with the banshee. And I guess that's kind of why I accept the low production value, because I kind of grew up with it. I haven't, you know, like if some of that stuff was in a film today, you know, it would take me out of it, because you're like, oh, you're trying to be cheesy or tongue in cheek or something like that.
Totally.
You know, but So let's move on a little bit here. Even going on further on to the film, when they go to the place where the seance took place and all the fun, crazy stuff happened. There's all these great imagery. Even if you're not paying attention to the story, like they just like walk in a room and a cat just comes flying out of the air. And go,
it's like, yeah,
it's so awesome.
I've been talking about that too.
No explanation.
Watch
the movie.
Yeah. So, for those that haven't seen it, So when Karen disappeared, there were three other people there with her. Okay, three other teenagers that were from the same village as she was. And Jan decides that she needs to go and talk to all three of these people. So she goes to Tom's house, Tom Colley, into his house. She finds his house, and he's kind of like a hermit in the woods.
Yeah.
A little crazy. It sounded like he was like an alcoholic, too, or something like that.
And also slow.
Yeah.
He's slow. Like, so he, you know, they made him sound like he was an alcoholic. He was kind of a hermit. He was, you know, mentally, he was slow. But she walks into his house. She walks in the door, and a cat flies in her face.
And not just flies, like, you can tell they threw a cat at her, and then the cat got mad. Why are you mad, cat? Because you just threw me at another human being. I said those words, like, why did they just throw a cat at her?
I mean, do you think that was a real cat that was like tossed in the air? There's no way, because that was just such a ridiculous shot. It was just meant to scare the viewer, you know. Like
that was definitely like a Pet Sematary style animatronic.
Yeah, yeah.
Cat. It's like mangy looking, and angry, and like just flies right at her face, and you're like, what the hell? What just happened?
Poor cat, man. That poor cat.
Yeah, I thought that was awesome.
I'll bet the cat and the clown were so effective in the movie theater.
The cat and the what?
The clown.
Oh, yeah. The clown
in the haunted house.
Oh, yeah.
The cat. Mm-hmm. I'll bet it was so cool.
People probably screamed and it jumped. Yeah,
Yeah, totally.
And there's no point to the cat, but I loved it. I love the commitment to just having that jump scare there. I just thought it was so ridiculous.
And it's really funny because it doesn't fit. It doesn't fit. The point, like, the Tom is supposed to be like this kind of crazy guy and whatnot, and then she gets in there and she finds out that he's this really kind, gentle guy who goes around saving hurt animals. And like the cat was one of the hurt animals that he has nursed back to health, and he's got this bunny, and if he finds them and they're dead, he buries them.
Right.
You know, and like that's the whole point of it, is to show you that Tom is not a bad guy or a crazy guy. He's actually a really sweet guy, which makes there's no connection between this cat flying through the air at her and trying to prove that this guy is like a nice guy. These things do not go together.
No, it was just to scare the audience.
Made no sense at all. None.
All right, so now we need to really dissect what was going on here at the end of the movie, and then get into the alternate endings.
I think there's one other thing we have to bring up, though.
Okay.
So Ellie, the youngest daughter, Ellie, is constantly throughout the movie getting possessed.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah, and she's speaking on behalf of the Watcher. Is that
of the Watcher?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So she's basically getting possessed by the Watcher, and really, what it is it starts as the Watcher is like talking to her, like whispering to her, and she keeps thinking it's her sister whispering to her, which makes no sense because her sister's not in the room. How's she whispering in your ear when she's in the other room?
On the opposite side of the field.
She's a dim-witted child.
Yeah, not very bright.
So it starts as her hearing the Watcher, and then as the movie goes on, eventually the Watcher like possesses her. But one of the scenes, is they're at a motorbike, like a dirt bike.
The boyfriend was in a motorbike race or something.
Yeah. They were dirt bike racing. And Jan is standing on this rock and she's watching the race. And Ellie is, you know, with Narek and is sitting quite a ways away. And she starts screaming. She's like, Jan, come here right now. You've got to come here right now. And Jan's like, what, dude? I'm trying to watch my boyfriend race. You know, but Ellie's like, almost frantic. So Jan runs over, and at that moment, one of the motorcyclists like bites it, and his motorcycle goes flying off the thing and lands right on the rock where Jan was standing.
Mm-hmm.
So Jan's like, oh my God, I was just standing there. Thank God you called me over here. What did you want? And Ellie's like, I didn't want you. Narek did. You know, but I feel like it's a really important scene because the Watcher just saved her life.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So again, you start to think that this entity is a bad guy, but on the other hand, he literally just saved her life. You know,
I didn't think about that.
Yeah. So now, again, you're not sure what's going on.
I was confused. That's where I was confused. I'm like, what is going on? This makes no sense.
I started thinking this was kind of one of those Final Destination type things. I think that's kind of, I don't know, just kind of like the whole, like, I didn't think that she was saving, that she got saved. I thought that her life was spared because she has a bigger purpose in what the Watcher wants to be carried out.
No, it was literally the Watcher possessed Ellie to call her over, to move her out of the way, to save her life.
Yeah.
That is what happened.
No, I mean, that makes sense. I think about it.
Interesting. Yep. So, I feel like that's another one of those things of like you said, you're totally confused. You're like, what is going on? But it is important to know that that Ellie is constantly getting possessed through this movie, and so that's kind of how we get like our information about what's going on is through her, through the Watcher speaking through her.
Yeah, Ellie really winds up driving a lot of the movie when it comes to the Watcher, because we have a disembodied whatever it is,
right?
So yeah,
which is of course inherently creepy—a possessed young child speaking.
Right, and she did a good job. Yeah. Dude, she's probably her and Betty Davis are probably the best actresses in the movie.
Seriously, I liked it when she goes between being possessed and then the dumb kid, because she's way better when she's possessed. I'm like, that's believable. And then she goes back to dumb kid. I'm like,
And a lot of that stuff might be direction too. You know, everyone's a bad actor or not bad, but. You'd have to imagine that.
Go ahead, James.
No, I'm just going to say, you have to imagine when you have a star caliber talent like Betty Davis, she's going to do Betty Davis. But everyone else is kind of, you know, just, they're going to listen to exactly to what the director wants, you know, and maybe the actress that played Jan, that's Lynn Holly Johnson, that's the way that she was directed to be in this over dramatic, dry thing.
But so,
goodness.
So, sorry, guys. I don't know what is up with my throat. So Lynn, the girl that played Jan, that played the lead, she was in one movie before she did Watcher in the Woods.
Right.
And it was absolutely terrible.
You saw it?
What movie was it?
It was terrible. Oh my God. It was like an ice skating movie.
Was it Disney?
No, it wasn't. Hold on.
You saw it? That's what I want to know.
Well, clearly, she's an expert on it.
Right? What's her name again? Lynn Holly who?
Lynn Holly Johnson.
Yes.
Yeah.
Roxy's been following her career for a long time now. After she saw Watcher in the Woods, she had to see everything.
She's
by
like, oh, let me get the first Lynn Holly Johnson joint.
I had to. I totally had to.
She was super believable. I actually do want to know what else this woman was in.
Okay, hold on. Oh, here we go. Okay. She had a couple acting jobs, but one of them, it was called Ice Castles, and she played a blind ice skater.
Wow, that sounds pretty incredible. I'm gonna have to check this out.
Yeah,
a blind ice skater.
Yeah, and apparently she's just as bad in all of them. She's just bad. Like there's just. Aww. But
she was just a pretty face, guys. Let's.
Right.
It was the hair.
But Kyle Richards, who played Ellie, who played the younger daughter before Watcher, she was in Little House on the Prairie, she was in The Car, she was in Eaten Alive, she was in Halloween.
Oh, wow.
What? Really?
Yeah. So,
wow. So she was a seasoned young actress.
Yeah. Yeah. She's in Halloween, so she's already got like the horror genre down.
Right? Yeah. Eaten Alive, The Car, and Halloween were all horror movies that she had already done before she did Watcher in the Woods.
Maybe that's why they cast her. Because she already had like the creepy kid vibe from the horror movies previously.
And she was already a Disney kid because she was in Escape to Witch Mountain.
All right.
She already had some kind of tie-in with the studio there. With
Kyle Richards.
In case anyone is wondering why Kyle Richards sounds familiar, you may know her from The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
Shut the front door.
That's
the same person.
Yep. She's Kyle from The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
Well, and I was going to ask what happened to her, and now I'm like, no, I know, and I don't need to know anymore.
Wow. Yeah, she was on like the Celebrity Apprentice, and she was on Real Housewives, and like, yeah, that's what happened to her. So,
oh
man, wow. There you go.
Her possessions continued in her later career.
Obviously. Hopefully she'll never hear this.
let's get to the end of this where Jan's like, all right, we need to recreate this to get Karen back because she cares so much about it.
She's like going through H-E double hockey sticks because of Karen and Karen the Watcher and this whole thing. Yeah. They're like literally. And she can't look in a mirror.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. She can't look in a mirror. So yeah, she's got to get rid of her sister's being possessed.
Yeah, there's nothing she can do. I got it. Even when they try to leave at some point, the car explodes.
Yeah, when they explode the bridge.
The car. Yeah.
Yeah, they explode the car. I liked that. I thought that part was pretty cool because the Watcher's like, you're not leaving. You've got to take care of this. So I'm going to explode your car.
Yeah, so
actually huge.
So the mom decides that she's getting these girls out of here because obviously they're in some kind of danger, and she puts them in the car and they try to drive away, and the Watcher stops them by first like killing the battery on the car and then ends up blowing up their car,
which is awesome because they really blew up a car for the film, you know? Yeah. On top of a bridge, and it's like, you know, it's night and it's very dark. It's not one of the usual movie nights where you can pretty much see
anything. And it's raining, and you can't even see out the windshield.
And then as soon as the explosion comes, the whole dark woods become illuminated. It is the amazing visual. very awesome.
So Jan's going through, and she's like, I got to fix this. We got to figure out how we can fix this because she's being haunted. And Ellie gets possessed again and is writing backwards on a mirror with soap and is saying things like, it's almost too late. It only happens every so often. She's like, oh, my God, what? And then Ellie wakes up. She doesn't know what she's talking about. But throughout the entire movie, like I said, there's all of the symbolism. And so Jan finally puts together all of the different symbols with there's like the blue circle in the water, the overlapping circles in the church, the triangles. She finally puts it together that the three people that did the seance in the first place need to get together in the church and recreate it on the eclipse. So, right. Yeah, which is, I love all of that when like later on in the movie, it ties together all of these things that you've seen. Like I'm a big fan of that.
All the foreshadowing is all there. Yep.
Yep. I really, really like that kind of stuff. So she finally, that's how she puts it together of what she has to do. And then she goes and she collects the grown-ups who were there and as teenagers and makes them come back and recreate it like she's Karen.
So she does this. All right. So what's in the theatrical ending? Like what?
Okay.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. Well, all right, we'll back up a little bit.
Okay.
So here's what happened. They made this movie, and the original ending of the movie was going to be close to what the ending in the book was. Because like you said, it was based off a book. The book was written a couple years before in 1976. So the original ending was going to be based off of the book. And they were making it. They were done with the movie. They were almost done with the ending. And it was getting close to Bette Davis's 50-year anniversary in Hollywood. She was hired in 1930. It was 1980. They wanted the movie to come out to coincide with her 50-year anniversary, so it would get more publicity. Right. And the ending wasn't done. So they were like, okay, crap. Well, let's just release it with what we have. So
bad idea, Disney.
And what did they have?
Okay. What they had was half a scene filmed. It was supposed to be, so they're in the church. You've got Jan in the middle. You've got the three people. They recreate the scene. The eclipse hits, and then the watcher appears and takes Jan, okay? And then Jan comes back with Karen.
The watcher appeared in that scene, in the theatrical film?
Yeah.
Huh?
No, in the original, in the first.
I don't remember that. Okay.
In all three versions, in all three endings, the Watcher appears, just in different ways.
Oh, okay. All right. So what did the Watcher look like in the
that's the best part.
It's 1980. Okay, it's 1980, and you're sitting in the movie theater, and the movie has just happened, and they're doing the thing, and the eclipse goes off, and a giant alien.
Oh, wait. No, that was the original ending. I'm talking about what happened
I said it's 1980. Like the original.
Oh.
The giant alien appears.
Right.
An alien. And it's with wings. The whole thing. And now all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, this is not a witchcraft movie. This is not a haunting movie. This is not a spirit. This is an alien movie.
It's a sci-fi.
And he picks up Jan, and he disappears, and then Jan appears with Karen, and they go back, and Karen reunites with her mom, and Ellie is like, what happened? And so Jan rattles off this really long explanation about what happened, and the movie ends.
Okay, I want to say one thing. I never interpreted the creature as an alien, like from another planet.
Now that's the one that you saw.
Okay, so here, so let me.
There are three different endings.
I got this. Okay. All right.
Okay.
Okay. So the critics hated it. They absolutely, completely hated the movie, because even if they were bought in the beginning, it got to the end and they were like, "What just happened? This movie doesn't even have an ending."
Right.
Of course. It didn't. So in the book and in their original ending that didn't get made, okay, what happens is the Watcher comes in and he's an alien and he takes Jan. And then there's a whole other scene where they like fly off in space.
Wow.
And they go to the Watcher's planet. Yeah. So they go to the Watcher's planet and she finds Karen there. And the Watcher's like, okay, take her back, because what had happened was when the eclipse happened the first time, the Watcher and Karen accidentally switched places. So Karen was sent into this other world in between something weird that they never quite managed to explain, and the Watcher was sent to our world and got stuck, which is why the Watcher's not a bad guy. So he needed Jan. He needed an eclipse and needed someone that looked like Karen, which was Jan, to recreate the thing so that he could go home, which is why he saved Jan's life.
Okay.
Earlier in the movie.
Yep.
Okay. So, yeah. So they're flying through space and, like, there's all this crazy stuff going on. And the Watcher kind of explains what happened with the eclipse and is like, you know, he very gently sets down Jan is like, okay, go get your friend and take her home,
sweet.
And I'm gonna stay here in my home finally after 30 years. And so Jan embraces Karen and they end up back in the real world, but the special effects weren't done in time for the movie to be released, so they cut all of that out completely.
So they had those scenes shot with no special effects.
Sound, no special effects. You can still see, like, on the alien part, on the wings, you could see the where the hinges were for the cords, the cables that are holding this thing up. Like, you could see everything.
Yeah,
because on the DVD that we watched, it had the extra footage in there.
Yep.
But you see it, yeah. So they didn't have any of that in there. So you got zero explanation when you originally received this movie on its first release of what actually happened. So it makes sense that it was canned.
Yeah. So it's 1980 and the movie is out and everyone is like, we don't understand the ending. There is no ending. It made no sense. And Disney was like, oh, crap. So they pulled it from the theaters. Okay. They re-released it in the theaters a year later in 1981 with the third ending. So instead of going back and finishing the first ending and putting those things back in there, they completely redid the ending. They got everyone back together. They refilmed it with a different director. Okay. It wasn't originally written. It wasn't with the original director. Bette Davis couldn't make it on location to shoot, so they actually shot her scenes in California. It was all this crazy stuff. And this is the ending that we all saw on VHS and on TV and all of that. So in this ending, they do the seance, and the eclipse goes off, and Ellie is possessed. And the Watcher is talking through Ellie, explaining exactly what happened with the eclipse and the switch and this and that. And then the Watcher manifests as a pillar of light.
Right. Yeah.
Which is why you never knew it was an alien movie. They made it way more of like an occult type thing because they couldn't work in the whole alien thing. Also, it was decided by Disney that the alien was too scary.
Wow.
It was actually, it was really good.
Yeah.
I liked it.
Alien when I saw the alternate ending. Here's my thoughts is that we had the ending that you just said. That's the one that we all watched. And I was like, who's the Watcher?
Right? That was my question as well. Yeah. Who the heck is the Watcher?
Because you're expecting a big reveal. And there is none.
It didn't work.
It did not deliver.
So Ellie, we'll call it the popular ending because it's the one that everybody's seen.
Right.
In that one, Ellie is possessed. She explains everything. The Watcher manifests as a pillar of light because the three original people are doing their circle of friendship, and the power from their friendship and the eclipse makes it so that the Watcher can finally manifest again. And then the Watcher, as the pillar of light, hits Jan. Jan kind of sort of disappears and reappears, and Karen is with her.
As an adult, though, right? Is this the as an adult
let's
one?
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about that for a quick second.
In the popular ending, Karen comes back as an adult.
Right.
Yes. In the original ending, Karen came back as a teenager, and
but she didn't even look like a teenager. She looked like Liza Minnelli at 40 years old with makeup to make her look like a teenager in a blonde wig.
Yeah, that was a little rough.
That was really rough.
Oh, it's a bad wig.
I don't understand. So I thought that it was supposed to be like some interdimensional thing, and I figured time has no meaning, but.
Okay, what?
I don't know. I'm lost.
No, she was chilling on Watcher's planet.
Yeah.
But we don't know that. But that's the thing. We don't know that. We don't actually know that. She just comes back and she's old. We think she's in another dimension.
And we're like, the first thing I'm thinking is like, so she's been in this other dimension for 30 years and she's an adult in kids' clothing, I guess, is that what it's supposed to be?
No, and that's the other thing, nope, because she's an adult and her dress fits as an adult. I'm like,
the point being is that she was able to live and exist in age. That means that she was able to eat.
Rocky's like, we had a discussion about this too. Rocky's like, people that are in other dimensions, do they eat? Do they use the restroom? She has these questions.
Like when they appear back in our world, do they have to pee?
Right.
I want to know these things when you come back from another dimension.
Are you hungry? Do you need some water?
That's what I'm saying. Figured she'd be hungry. I have to pee.
But
tired.
Yeah,
she probably hasn't slept.
And again, that's why it didn't exactly work, because she was supposed to be in stasis in this other world or dimension or planet or whatever, right, and come back as a teenager. But when they did the popular ending, they didn't do that. They cut out all the alien stuff. They made it a, like, basically like the Upside Down, like another dimension, and somehow she came back older.
Upside Down from Stranger Things, in case people can catch it. But the other weird thing about that is, is, so let's go with the alien comes, and she comes back as a teenager. But she's been gone for 30 years. Why would she not age on the alien planet?
Because when you see her on the alien planet, she's not, like, free and running around.
Yeah, she's, like, stuck in a column of light.
Yeah, she's, like, stuck in this column of light. She's, like, suspended.
Oh, okay. So she's, like, she's not actually on the planet. She's in this, like, limbo area. Okay.
Yeah, and, like, kind of its prisoner, it seems like, almost.
And that's how she's able to communicate through the mirrors.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's able to, like, psychically go from this place to the mirror.
That's really cool. I mean, it's weird that it's turning an alien thing, because it doesn't seem like it at all. It definitely seems like a supernatural
thing. But I guess thing. You said the book was alien. I want to read the book now. I want to find a copy of this book and read it.
Sorry.
Wow. So
it's okay.
We also have Alien that came out around this time as well. So they were trying to latch on to all these different things. They're trying to have an Exorcist Alien crossover film, I guess.
Yeah. Well, that's not surprising, because let's think about 80s. Area 51 was a really big deal. We also had the Cold War was still going on in the 80s. You had all the conspiracy theorists about aliens and all that stuff. And New Mexico is still a really big thing. So not surprising that aliens would be part of it. Although, when was the book originally written? That's another
76.
Question. 76. Okay, so, wow.
Yeah, okay. The book was only 2 years old when they decided to make it into a movie. Oh, it was still a brand new book.
Right, so it was basically people didn't know the book. It wasn't, they just knew the movie.
Disney thought, like, we're going to make this into a movie.
So, so a few years after it came out in the theater, Disney put it on home video. It was a Disney home video. And, you know, it was the one I had was, you know, the white, remember the white plastic?
Oh, yeah.
The shell case.
Yeah. So it was that one. They put it out on VHS, and it had, you know, what we're referring to as the popular ending. and then in, was it 90 something? I'd have to look it up. A second. Anyways, so sometime in the 90s, another company got the rights to a bunch of movies to put them out on DVD. And that company got the rights to Watcher in the Woods was one of the movies. So they decided to put it out on DVD. It was right when, like, DVDs had came out.
So the early 2000s, late 90s then, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they decide that they're not only going to put the movie out on DVD, they're going to put out the original theatrical ending, and they wanted to put out the original ending that never even made it into theaters. They put it out with the director's audio commentary.
Oh, wow.
They put it out with, like, all kinds of special.
So they went all in on this release. They weren't just putting out whatever and taking it as is.
No, and they're the ones, if you go and you, okay, and then years later, Disney put it out again on DVD through themselves, and they kept in, that's what else. They had the theatrical trailers for it. They had the commercial that was on TV for it, like, all kinds of stuff. So Disney re-put it out in the, like, later 2000s, and they have the two alternate endings and then the two trailers. So the reason that we have that alternate ending but never made it into the movie is because when these people decided to put it out on DVD, they went to Disney and were like, can we have everything you have so we can put it all together and create this ending that was never created?
Wow.
So they took all of the raw footage.
Oh, so together. Anchor Bay made these, but because I was wondering why Disney would have had this all cut together, but they didn't.
They didn't. Anchor Bay did. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yep. So yeah, so that was cool. Like they're the reason that we get to to see this, all of the space stuff and whatnot, because they went to Disney and they were like, hey, can we have all of this footage and we'll like fix it?
Well, did this film have a cult following enough to even merit doing all that work?
Well, Disney kept showing it, right? Like, they would play it on the Disney Channel for Halloween because it was, like, a creepy thing. Yeah, so, and I'm sure it developed some type of cult following, but not...
I think whoever was at Anchor Bay that took on this movie must have just been a fan of this movie.
Right.
Makes sense.
You know, I mean, that's the only the thing that I can figure is that maybe they saw it when they were, like, 10 years old, and then they were working this job, and they were like, ooh, we got Watcher in the Woods? You know, because, like... But yeah, but thanks to them, we got the we got to see the alternative endings. I'm kind of sad that the Disney version, which is like if you get it on Netflix, it's the one you can get on Netflix now. Is the Anchor Bay version is gone. You can hardly find it anymore. The Disney version, they didn't release it with the director's commentary, which I think is kind of upsetting because I think it'd be real interesting to hear what the director has to say.
Especially
that's what I want to hear.
Especially about 20 years later, because that's when that was would have been recorded if it came out. You know, like, it would have been a real interesting retrospective of it. And since it wasn't released by Disney, it probably was off the cuff. That's probably why they didn't put it down.
Like, this is not Disney approved.
Yeah. Yeah, and the and again, the popular ending that we all see, that the one that everybody got to see, was not directed by the director. The director's John Howe, and it was not directed by him. It was directed by someone totally different, so it does kind of have a different feel than the rest of the movie. Also, he directed Escape to Witch Mountain, too.
Oh, okay.
That was also one of his movies.
Well, I'll look forward to getting to that one.
Which I definitely liked a lot more. Although I haven't seen Escape to Witch Mountain as an adult, so
yeah, be careful. Really, okay,
I'm not gonna go back and watch it. Like,
yes, you
I
are.
Because we're the same experience we're, again.
Yeah, well, too bad. I'm ruining your childhood one movie at a time.
Why? I can do that on my own. Fine, I'll watch it again. I won't watch Return to Witch Mountain though, because I didn't like that one.
Really.
Yeah, I like the first one.
I loved both.
Yeah, it's funny. I haven't seen most of these movies.
Why didn't you see most of these movies?
I don't know.
Mommy, were you not like a big Disney fan at the time, or
no? Quite the contrary. Like, so my mother conditioned me from birth. You know, like, so my mom's the one that showed me Darby O'Gill and The Parent Trap. Because those are movies that she loved when she was a kid, and that, and when I was young around that age, that's when home video first came out. So she was able to go to the video store and rent these, and then every time an animated film got re-released, you know, we always went. I saw all the Disney classics in the theater. I just feel like my mom probably just didn't want to watch those other movies. Just really, so she didn't let me know about it. I had no way to know about it besides if my mom took me to see it.
Right. I don't blame her.
And maybe she thought they were too scary for you.
Right. And I don't know if it was for me, but my sister's 6 years younger than me, so...
And if you guys would go see movies and watch movies together, yeah, that makes a big difference, too.
Yeah, that makes total sense.
So that's probably...
Yeah. And my sister's 7 years younger than me, so we wouldn't go... You know, we never got to see anything kind of scary. She was with us.
So that's kind of my... That's my thought process, is that my mom wasn't into it, and maybe she thought my sister was too scary. So we're just like, oh, we're going to go see Cinderella again.
Again?
I've seen Snow White... and Cinderella are in two different theatrical runs.
Nice.
You know, and then shortly after that VHS started blowing up, we're like, you know, we don't have to have these theatrical releases anymore.
Just buy the VHS and watch it over and over again the tape's all messed up.
Till it's all wavy.
Yeah, right.
My sister did that to my Little Mermaid. My sister loved Little Mermaid, and she would watch it every single day, and that... I mean, we still have that VHS, and it is literally warped. We cannot play it anymore. We still have a VHS player, too, which cracks me up. My mom has a bunch of old cartoons and movies and stuff like that for my grandmother, so. Right, yeah.
I still have I got a VCR, it. And That's what, when we did our Black Cauldron episode. I have that on VHS, and that's what I used to rewatch it. But now I don't have a TV that will hook up to a VCR. I have to get some kind of an adapter.
You have to get like special low technology.
Yeah.
Or low tech, whatever.
So, I got it. But anyways, wrapping up this. I mean, that's pretty much it. I mean, I think if you're like, I don't care about spoilers, and I just wanted to listen to this, you definitely need to watch it, I think, because just the visuals of this are incredible. If you don't buy this alien being story, you know, that's fine.
If you don't buy the alien story, that's cool, because you have no idea what's the alternate ending.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say, to me, when I watched the alien thing, I was like, oh, okay. So that's the Watcher.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. The alien is the Watcher. The pillar of light is the Watcher. Like, that's, but they do a really bad job of explaining that.
Yeah. I didn't really get it. You know, I just kind of was like, all right, again, because the whole time it's POV. So you're waiting for the reveal.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then you have the reveal. Exactly. And they don't tell you it's the reveal.
Right. That's what I'm saying. And the one they released, I didn't know it was reveal. I'm like, I was like, where is the Watcher? Are we just ignoring there was somebody watching the whole time?
You're ignoring the title character.
So that
the name is even in the title.
So they ruined the ending, but you know, we can all agree on that. But,
a couple of other interesting tidbits for anyone that likes this movie as much as I do. There's a version, Betty Davis's character, there's a version of her in a flashback where she's younger, and Betty Davis wanted to play both parts.
Mm-hmm.
I would have bought it.
She was 72 when this movie was
okay, maybe not.
Wow.
Okay.
She didn't care. We're
going to start there. Betty Davis was 72 when this movie was made. And she wanted to play both parts. She said that she could do it, and because she's Betty Davis, no one wants to tell her no. So they brought in like hair and makeup and this and that, and they tried to make her look younger, and they did the screen test. And they watched the dailies, and the director was like, we need the room. Everybody please leave. And it was just him.
him and Betty Davis.
Yeah, and he was like, he looked at her and he was like, no. No. You can't, this is not going to happen. And she was like, oh, you're right.
Oh, she agreed. She didn't challenge him on it. Oh, okay.
Yeah, the person that they got to play her, there was something going on with the pronunciation of Karen. I don't know if it was like the bad English accent thing. I don't know what it was, but she's running through saying it. I'm like, she's saying Karen? Like, what is she saying? Like, I just they didn't get someone with big enough eyes, so I didn't believe it. I thought it was the daughter at first. I was like, well, she's pretty old for a teenager.
That's interesting.
That was supposed to be her. So yeah, I guess the makeup took like, you know, maybe 20 years off her age, but certainly not 30 or 40. So he was like, you can't do this. And she supposedly, the story is, she took a drag off her cigarette, a long drag off her cigarette, and said, you're right.
I want to believe that. I'm just going to believe that.
The actress that they got to play the young her was a British actress named Georgina Hale, and she was a huge Betty Davis fan. So this was like a dream come true for her.
Yeah.
So sure. Sucked at it.
So she was super excited. Horrible.
Well, that's interesting trivia there.
The movie was nominated for a Saturn Award for Best International Film in 1982.
What is the Saturn Awards?
Saturn. The Saturn Award is an award presented by the Academy of Science Fiction, Fantasy, and Horror Films.
Oh, nice.
It was created to honor those things, but since the real Academy didn't.
Right.
We'll never flip in.
So basically, this film did have an audience when it came out. Even though the ending was so bad, people that enjoyed it.
It didn't have a huge audience. It only made $5 million. In the box office, it made like 1 million its opening weekend, and total it made 5 million.
So it was not the Disney's Exorcist financially.
Yeah, no. But it was nominated for a Saturn Award, and then Kyle Richards, who played Ellie, was also nominated for a Saturn Award for Best Supporting Actress, and she was nominated for Best Young Artist, or the Young Artist Award.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
So everybody really liked her.
I don't blame them. She was likable.
Yeah, she was.
It only made $5 million. I honestly don't know how much, and I've been trying to kind of look it up because I knew I was going to talk about this. I'm trying to look up how much
it cost to make it.
Yeah, but I can't find it anywhere. But in 1983, Something Wicked This Way Comes cost $19 million to make.
Oh, so this was not good. That they only
it probably spent similar.
Gives
you an idea.
Oh boy, so it wasn't as hit, and I mean with all the reshoots and all this stuff and them wanting to be like a huge hit. I mean, this could have taken down Disney.
Right. The reviews for the opening weekend were awesome. And I mean, like, awesomely bad.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Ladies Home Journal wrote, "The Watcher in the Woods wastes the talents of Bette Davis and wastes our time with the non-talents of two children who speak in monotones."
That's how I felt.
"This dreary Disney movie may scare some 10-year-old girls who enjoy teenage mysteries, but parents and other adults will be exasperated." Essence said, "I could not figure out what audience this film was made for. The plot had no new twist on the haunted English mansion scenario. Bette Davis as the mother of the haunty is not enough to legitimize this horrid horror. As a matter of fact, The Watcher in the Woods is best left unwatched."
Ooh, and sick burn.
And Variety said, "The acting and writing are barely professional, but the art direction, especially Alan Hume's stunning camera work, gives the pick a bit of gloss."
There we go.
There you go. And that, and again, this, there are definitely points of the cinematography that I was like, all right, I'll buy that.
Yep. The reviews after it came out in 1981 were a little nicer and better. But I just thought those reviews were like so...
And that was the original.
Yeah, it's painful.
That was the original release.
It was the original 1980. Yeah. By 1981, when it came out, let me see. Hollywood Reporter said, "A rattlingly good suspense yarn. The ending is seamless, satisfying, and resolves the mystery. The film is genuinely eerie and scary."
Oh.
And then the New York Times
said... Who did they pay off?
Uh-huh. The New York Times said, "The early good reviews for the revised Watcher in the Woods do not by any means solve all of Disney's problems. The PG-rated movie is tense and scary enough to appeal to teenage audiences that the studio has been trying to woo for the last 4 or 5 years. But can any film with the Disney label actually attract teenagers?"
Right. I mean, that's how they eventually realized that they had to not release under the Disney label.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, the original reviews were bad.
Painful. Also, it just goes to show when there's an alien reveal at the end of a movie, people don't like it as much.
No, you got to reveal that it's an alien.
Yeah.
when they re-released it in 1981, they put a thing out there, new like promotion for it. "Walt Disney Productions ushers in a new decade of motion picture entertainment with the following invitation to spend 90 minutes on the edge of your seat." Oh. And released before the 1981 movie in the theaters, but not on anything else, not on the Disney Channel, not on the VHS, not on the DVD, was a warning. "As proud as we are of The Watcher in the Woods, Walt Disney Productions strongly recommends that parents pre-screen the picture for preteens. It is not for small children."
Really?
Yep.
That's awesome.
I think I'm out of trivia now.
We're good. So. Are we going to wrap it up here?
All right, cool.
I really like this movie. What?
No, it's good. You liked it. Cupcake doesn't want to watch it.
Never again.
He doesn't want to watch it in the woods and in the city or on the beach.
Not in a house, not in a car, not anywhere, not anywhere by far.
And I want to watch it again. I want to actually own it. I rented it from Netflix as well, the disc, because this is not on streaming. And I would love to track down this Anchor Bay version.
James,
I can track you down a copy of the Anchor Bay one.
Someone's got to have it. somewhere in this wide world. Right?
we have the internet, for goodness sake. We have everything.
We have eBay. What else do we need?
Give me my Anchor Bay. I want the real commentary.
Yeah, I wonder if any of our listeners have the copy of it.
Yeah, then send it his way. Yeah, we just send it our way because we deserve it, right?
Right? You can make copies of it. Oh, I mean, that's illegal. You're not supposed to. But I could probably make a copy.
Terror.
Sorry, my bad.
If anyone has the Anchor Bay copy of this and would like to loan it to us so that we can watch the director's commentary, that would be amazing.
That would.
In case we can't find it online, but I'm going to look for it.
All right. We'll track it down. So this is fun. I love going through these films. I love getting a chance to watch them because I said I haven't seen most of them. And I mean, I probably the Dark Ages films, 75 to 85, I really haven't seen most of them. One that comes to mind I know I have seen is that I saw in the theaters was Tron.
Greatest movie of all time.
Definitely. Anyways, I'm excited to go through these, and it's just interesting that these films are part of the Disney history. Nope. And this one right here was so jarring to me on how dark and un-Disney it was. You know, what's funny is that when they created Touchstone Pictures, they put out Nightmare Before Christmas on Touchstone. They put out Who Framed Roger Rabbit on Touchstone, which those two brands are inherently Disney right now. But they thought that they would be so off-brand from Disney that they had to put it under a different label. And that's just the few years after Watcher in the Woods comes out as a Disney movie, or at least within, not, you know, 5 or 10 years, you know, like it's not that far removed. So it's very interesting, the decision. I think it'd be an interesting topic to explore the birth of Touchstone Pictures. And what they decided to release under that label. Cause I don't even think it even really exists anymore. Every once in a while, some movie will say it's Touchstone. We're like, oh, okay. Like, I think not even that long ago, there was, movie came out with a Touchstone label.
I expect to see Touchstone when I put in a VHS. Like, I expect to see it, you know, come across
the little Touchstone pictures. Little,
Right. Also, I lied. I have one more piece of trivia, you guys.
All right, one more trivia, then we're out of here.
One more, I promise, and then I'm done. But it has to do with what you were just talking about.
Okay.
So this is before Touchstone, and this is the Dark Ages, and in those 10-ish years, they made a bunch of movies, but like Tron, like you said, Flight of the Navigator, Midnight Madness, Something Wicked This Way Comes, Return to Oz, Watcher in the Woods, you know, all of those type of movies. But out of a good list of them, like The Black Hole, Tron, Condor Man, Midnight Madness, Return to Oz, Something Wicked, at one point in time or another, Disney has denied making them, but just disowned them.
Really?
Distance themselves completely.
Yeah, totally distance. They weren't showed on the Disney Channel. You know, all of that kind of stuff where Disney just didn't want to, like The Black Cauldron, you know, they didn't want them released. They didn't want them on VHS. They didn't want their name on them. Watcher in the Woods is the only one that they never disowned.
Really?
Yeah, they released it on VHS. It was not a problem. They showed it every year on the Disney Channel. Like, it was the only one out of this list of, like, darker, you know, teenager movies that they never, like, shoved in a closet.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. That's so sad.
That's interesting. Because this is the... So far, I mean, this is one of the darkest ones.
Yeah, it's one of the darkest ones. It's weird.
It's even darker than Black Cauldron. So
yeah, that's what I'm saying. Black Cauldron has some really, definitely some dark moments, but there's so much goofiness in it too. You know, so it's like,
I mean, it's Mad Madam Mim. You can't really,
but like Black Cauldron had a lot of like occult and death and like. You know, the Horned King looked like Satan and all of that. So they're like, oh, we don't want to be associated with that. But this one, because like in the original one, when Jan is going to do this thing and she tells Betty Davis she's going to go get Karen back, Betty Davis mentions that you can't do a seance because that's the occult and blah, blah, blah. Well, they cut that line from the popular release. So there's no mention of like religion or a cult or, you know, ghosts even or spirits. So it's not like they could be associated with anything negative because there's no bad guy in this movie.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
There's no bad guy at all in this movie. The Watcher is supposedly the bad guy, but
he's not really the bad guy.
He's not. He's stuck. He saves Jan's life. She's just stuck there and he wants to go home, you know, and he gives Karen back as soon as he can. Like, there is no bad guy in this movie.
Oh, man, I didn't think about that. It's nuts. If they announced they were remaking this movie, I think I'd be about it. I'm going to be honest.
Good too.
I think there's enough meat. There's enough meat there to do something really cool visually and to fix the story. And to give more foreshadowing to the alien appearance.
Yep, but yeah, I think it'd be cool if they remade it. I think it'd be really neat. There's a lot they could do with the visual effects now. I'm sure it would look a lot cooler. Like, I think it'd be neat.
Well,
if anyone from Disney is listening, please don't remake Watcher in the Woods. Please don't.
Call me.
Just say no.
I'm saying I'm a fan. I will help. I'll help.
I'll help out too. You should help too, Cupcakes, to know that they don't make the same mistakes. I mean, it's all. No, you just reject this entire premise.
I'm just gonna reject the entire paradigm. I refuse to acknowledge that I had to watch it. I refuse to acknowledge its existence. I'm over and I'm done with it.
All right.
I can't wait till Cupcake has to watch Escape from Witch Mountain again.
Oh, I'm nervous now. Because I really liked that one. That was a fun movie.
Well, I don't know which one we'll do next, but we'll figure it out. And we'll continue on in our Dark Ages saga.
When are we going to do Tron? Huh?
Well, Tron's part of those films, so.
It is. My bad. Also, I've said, like, Escape from Witch Mountain, like, a billion times in this podcast, and it's Escape to Witch Mountain. I don't know why I keep doing that. Escape to Witch Mountain. I apologize to all the Disney fans out there because I keep saying it wrong.
They were yelling each time at their podcast.
They're like, two! Dang it, Roxy! What the heck's wrong with you? To Witch Mountain. They're trying to get there.
My bad.
That's what The Rock was doing. No, I'm just kidding.
Hey, do you want to contact us here at Creepy Kingdom? You could do so by sending us an email, creepykingdom@gmail.com. And for show notes, check out our videos and articles, and to sign up for our mailing list that gives you the show notes, videos, and articles right to your inbox, and links to all of our social media, your one-stop shop is creepykingdom.com. Well, until next time.
I have to go now. It's midnight. Pleasant dreams.